you in the 06010.
Welcome to Fantasy Focus Football. We are presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. It's Thursday, April 4th. Field, Daniel, Stefania, and Mike, the animosity from an absolute bloodbath victory on Tuesday in trivia has already subsided.
Still riding high, though.
Yeah, it has been a great week. I have
really
been,
good
like,
week.
I have been walking with my nose up in the air, like I own the joint.
Won.
That's an interesting interpretation.
Stop it. Wow. You had to go to overtime. Four points.
That feels like a pretty big gap.
Feels like a fairly big gap.
25
loss
total.
Mike, there you go, taking it on the chin right there.
Stefania and Mike, though, it's okay. We do respect your insight, and we would love to have you join us today.
You sound so serious.
No, I'm just saying, I don't want you to feel bad about the fact that you got smoked. You know, like that's.
I don't feel bad because you know what? The listeners wanted to come have dinner with me.
Wow.
That's a good point. Winner in life is Stefania Bell. Here's what's happening on the show today. So we got something sort of fun to kick off the show, and then we're going to dive into social questions, which are also fun. Thanks, everybody, that has been submitting them. And by the way, you can always get in touch with us at Fantasy Focus on Twitter, a great way to interact with our entire team behind the scenes. They do an awesome job looking through various replies and questions that might be on your mind specific to fantasy football because – let's be honest. Fantasy football is a 365-day a year exercise. Mm-hmm. But every offseason, Mike Clay is the person who is responsible for deciding that, you know, there are a couple of quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, even kickers that have just been in the database for so long. And at some point, you got to kind of refresh the data, Mike, and decide players who are no longer free agents. They are officially retired. They are not going to factor into the projections. They are not going to be available in the player pool. And every year, it's always kind of funny to see who gets wiped away from the player pool. So we thought we'd lead off the show today by giving you some highlights from the various players that, effective this year, even if you want to, you can no longer draft or claim off of waivers on ESPN Fantasy.
Yeah, the annual purge, we call it. So every year, I go through this. Believe it or not, I have a process for this. There are some boxes you have to check to be eliminated. For example, if you've been drafted in the last 3 years, you're still in the database. Okay. If you have not, if you've played in the last 2 years, you're in the database. If you're on a roster right now, you're still in the database. That's the short and long of it. There's other little technicalities in there. But otherwise, you know, guys that have been out of the league a couple of years are wiped away. And every year there's some fantasy legends. And sometimes, by the way, people are like, what? This guy's hasn't played in like 7 years. What are you talking about? And you're like, no, who's played two years ago.
Like, you have him on the quarterback list. And I'm like, Matt Schaub retired 9 years ago.
Right, exactly.
There's no
doubt
in my mind.
And
right?
it's always funny.
You're telling me he's on the Atlanta Falcons like 3 years ago.
He probably played some snaps in 2021 as backup.
I'm sure he did. I'm taking you at your word here. Right. I'm just telling you he didn't.
I'm always surprised, too. I'm like, did we miss this guy 5 years ago? Like, how is he still there? But nope, every time.
There are a lot of names at each position. So let's just go through. Let's name an all-purge team, if you will, Mike.
An all-purge team.
And this guy right here deserves, I don't even know if we can call him on the purge team. Like, that feels unkind to one of the highest scoring players in the history of fantasy football at quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. It is Drew Brees, who actually my dad and I were huge fans of when he was at Purdue. Actually, I should have teed you up to see if you remember that. Do you know he went to Purdue? You know all the colleges.
Yes,
of course.
Yes.
I saw him play a Penn State walk down to field level.
Yeah.
And then my dad likes to tell this story. We went out. We at halftime. They walk right through the fans and go into the locker room. And I stood there and he was like, oh, like hit him on the shoulder pads or something. This was at halftime of a game. And I went up, hit him on the shoulder pads, like security grabbed me and pulled me away because he was already like big time at that point. This is before he was in the NFL, obviously, but we loved him. And
Papa Clay
he went on
trying
to
get a 7-year old arrested.
By the way, for the record, that's the closest Mike has come to running into the law in his entire life when 7-year old Mike like just went to go touch a soon to be NFL quarterback on the shoulder. Although, as it turned out, there was good reasons to protect that shoulder as he ended up throwing for a ton of yards until some Tom Brady guy came along. Drew Brees, of course, had the most passing yards and passing touchdowns in NFL history. Who are a few other quarterbacks that are no longer available to add on ESPN Fantasy?
Yeah, so this one's going to hurt. I know a lot of people won lots of games with Blake Bortles. Ooh. So
unbelievable
tough one.
Best year.
He did that one year, right? Yeah, that one year he was great in fantasy. Yeah. So Blake Bortles, out of the system. RG3.
ESPN colleague.
Our colleague, yes, Alex Smith.
Also ESPN colleague.
Yes. Matt Schaub, and now Phillip Rivers.
High school coach Phillip Rivers, yeah.
He sure
did. You see he reached, I think, was it him or was it Ben Roethlisberger that noted that like teams were calling them down the stretch last year? Mm-hmm. It might have been both of them. Yeah. So Phillip Rivers, we may have to bring a player from the all-purge team back onto the all-active team because stranger things have happened than a team calling in a quarterback that has supposedly hung it up and decided to go on to the next phase of his career.
Yeah, and if there are rumors even, I'll just activate them.
Okay, like that's, fair enough.
We'll keep an eye on that.
A running back list that is highlighted by a player, Mike, that I think this one, like he has to be like 29 years old. How is he possibly purged?
Yeah, at running back?
Yeah.
Todd Gurley. Yeah, Todd Gurley shows you the shelf life of running backs. Just a few years ago, this guy was an absolute fantasy superstar. Kyle put some stats down for us. During his Rams career, 2015 to 2019, the third highest scoring flex player, and was RB1. He was fantastic. A couple other guys on the purge list, Alfred Morris, Lamar Miller, Deion Lewis, LeSean McCoy, Frank Gore, and a couple other guys that were fun at times or high pedigree guys.
Yeah.
TJ Yeldon and Theo Riddick, too.
I love me some Theo Riddick. Yeah, that's right.
But you had to love nobody more than Todd Gurley, Daniel, because first of all, he was a running back, which makes things that's always valuable in fantasy. But also, he had a cool story, right? Like ACL tear late in his college career, and people say, like, he can't go in the first round. He ends up going 10th overall to the Rams, starts playing like halfway through that season. You instantly were like, wow, he's the best player on their roster. He did it all. Like that run. Like we need to throw a little more appreciation on Todd Gurley's run for like four straight years as the most valuable player in fantasy football.
Yeah, it's just so sad that it was such a shortened career because we saw so much skill and everything that Todd could do once he was able to be healthy and on the field. But it didn't feel like we got to have that longevity that we've seen with a lot of these other running backs that we've learned to love. And so that's the appreciation. You basically have 4 to 5 years of peak Todd Gurley, and then unfortunately, came off of a cliff pretty quick.
I kind of think about running backs that define fantasy football, and there are various phases, obviously, right? Like, LaDainian Tomlinson might be considered by some to be the best fantasy football running back of all time, but, like, you had the Arian Foster era. You had, I would consider that the Todd Gurley era, where there were other great running backs, of course, but Todd Gurley stood above the rest of them. I'm going to ask Stefania about a guy who stood above many more wide receivers for a long time. But Mike, before we get to the wide receiver who sort of makes the all-purge team designation, who are some other running backs? You mentioned TJ Yeldon and Theo Riddick for Daniel, but let's get to the wide receivers then.
Yep.
So the all-purge team wide receiver pick is?
It is, how about the only guy who has, or only Jerry Rice has more fantasy points all time than this guy.
That's absurd.
And he's in the purge list.
Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what bothers me, Stefania, about Larry Fitzgerald?
Nothing.
What? No, well,
no. I want to hear this.
What bothers me is that he never made a retirement announcement. And so we never got the chance to celebrate the greatness. I know it's been celebrated sort of bit by bit in the 3 or whatever number of years it's been since he retired. But when a player comes out and says, I'm done, it gives us the chance to really shine the light on that player. And I feel like Larry Fitzgerald never got that.
I know, and I'm not sure that he really ever wanted it. It's just sort of the way he's always went about his business, too. The Larry Fitzgerald, who would put up consistent, even in the latter stages of his career, right? You always knew that he was the safety valve for whoever was throwing the ball, Mr. Reliable, so who's good for solid fantasy points. And then every offseason would go to somewhere where he'd never been. That was a big thing of his, was to travel and to study. And just one of the brightest guys to play the game on top of it. And now working as an analyst.
ESPN colleague, yeah. Larry Fitzgerald. And one of the most amazing parts about Larry Fitzgerald. Go check his quarterback list. It's awful.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Carson Palmer and him had this incredible connection once Palmer ended up in Arizona. But oh my goodness, Mike, it was a bunch of wannabe quarterbacks that Larry Fitzgerald was playing with.
Yeah, there's always been a handful of guys like that. Usually they land with someone eventually that could kind of carry them. And it was tough for him for a long stretch there and kind of cost him at times in the touchdown department. But he was just so good. And to your point, very humble, right? Kind of like the only guy that's ever outscored him in fantasy points, Jerry Rice, who once said, yes, I think I'm the best receiver at all time. But you never hear me say that.
Well, and as somebody who is a fan of a different team in the NFC West and has no love lost for the Arizona Cardinals, I always felt badly that Larry Fitzgerald couldn't get. I felt like he deserved to be on a championship team.
Yeah. But you didn't feel that bad.
Well, not bad.
Well, as a 49ers fan,
he felt bad, but not that bad. Just to be clear,
who did he? He probably caught some passes from.
Drew
Favre?
Stanton.
No, I mean when he was with a Vikings ball boy.
The Packers. Yeah.
Was that point in his career?
No, I want to say wasn't he there?
I don't know.
I you know what? I was gonna start naming names, and then I was like, you know something? I have no clue. I don't know. He was a 2003 draft.
Maybe a little Randall in there.
Maybe late career Randall Cunningham.
Rich Gannon.
That would make some sense
to me. Yeah, maybe in that era.
Who are
anyway.
Other wide receivers? Go ahead,
I just want to bring this up because I think it's interesting. I know with the running backs, we didn't really dive into it, but Alfred Morris is a name that has a lot of history with this podcast.
I don't recall that history.
Yeah. But Stefania, I think one of the biggest names that we have ever talked about on this show is the very first one up on this list after Mike, and that's Alshon Jeffrey. Have you talked about any player ever more in the history of this podcast than Alshon Jeffrey?
Is he questionable for this week?
I know, even in retirement, Alshon Jeffrey right? is still questionable. Questionable, but he was the player that became celebrated on this podcast because every week his status was in doubt. Mm-hmm. But if he played, he always would, you know, yep. he was a threat to do big things. And we loved Alshon Jeffrey on this podcast. He finally got his with the Eagles, right?
Yeah,
sure did.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sure
did.
Hang around
yeah.
long
That's
enough.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, Alshon on the list. Des Bryant is on this list.
Des caught it.
Des caught it.
Just, you beat me that one was for Field.
Yeah.
Julian Edelman.
Yep.
Yeah,
and a couple other here. Dante Moncrief. And I guess that's Golden Tate. I believe it was Golden
that
Tate.
That is Golden Tate. I got to be honest with you, Mike. I don't want to throw too much shade here.
No, go ahead.
But Dante Moncrief has to be like, thank you, Mike Legg.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
But
you
that,
just
that
listed
was,
Alshon Jeffrey, Des Bryant, Larry Fitzgerald, Julian Edelman, and Dante Moncrief.
But sometimes I list guys that are like football Twitter heroes. Like, we love them. We hype them up every year. They're sleepers.
We tried to make them happen.
Exactly. And so I like to include a few of those guys for fun.
Dante Moncrief just unblocked Mike on Twitter. That's why he's included on this list.
I don't know.
Beyond that, by the way, is... Dante Moncrief, like, he kept getting paid for a while, too. Like,
yeah.
After rookie contract, he went to, the Colts
first. Yeah,
the
Colts got,
like,
a $1
million
deal.
Yeah. And you're like, wait, what?
Who's laughing? Mm-hmm. Dante Moncrief
That's
is
right.
better than all of us,
oh,
right?
To be clear, like, he doesn't care about my sort of pot shot there for including him amongst the likes of guys that are going to be Hall of Famers, or Julian Edelman, who's, like, the second leading playoff receiver of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the Dante Moncrief is laughing his way, as Stefania said, to the metaphorical bank, or the literal bank in his case. Believe it or not, the number two scoring tight end of all time is not Travis Kelce, but it is a player that's no longer in the game, Mike.
Mm-hmm. It is Jason Witten. Yeah.
How about
Dallas
Cowboys?
Yeah, he's.
Would you have guessed that?
Only based on longevity.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. He was he's there forever, and one of the favorite targets for Tony Romo.
Can I ask where Travis Kelce is in that list, though, Mike?
I don't know that answer.
I got to figure.
Thirsty Kyle, can you look that up for us?
I was going to say top five, top seven at worst, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Kyle will figure that out, but Jason Witten was the second highest scoring tight end of all time with 2,970.3 mm-hmm. points.
Wow.
I would have guessed Antonio Gates had more. Because he scored so many touchdowns. He was more athletic. That's true. And his career was shorter than Jason Witten's for sure.
Yeah, Witten retired, came back.
Yep. Yeah.
Caught a few more
passes.
That?
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's he did.
Came back bald with the Raiders.
This might be the name on here where you're like... No way. He's been gone for like 6 years, right? Because he was. Like, he was in the Monday Night Football booth. Okay, right?
Take that back. He actually went back to the Cowboys first. I went to the combine.
That's what it was.
And it was like, the Cowboys announced he was coming back. And then a year later, some people thought, hey, this was a year to come back. It was a natural way to back out of an opportunity in the Monday Night Football booth. Mm-hmm, it wasn't the right fit, right?
Right.
It turned out it was no. It was like, I'm coming back to play for like 3 more years
mm-hmm.
and make some real money, by the way. Jason Witten, I think he will be an NFL head coach if he decides to go down that coaching path seriously. That was always the rap on Jason mm-hmm. Witten, was that he'll be either the University of Tennessee head coach or an NFL head coach if he decides to pursue that path. Who are some other ones that also made the list?
Yeah, speaking of guys who are in media or are now, Greg Olson, he's on the list.
So
yeah.
good.
Number one broadcast
awesome.
At least right now.
Trey Burton. We
what?
Love him. Love
Eagles,
him.
Trey Burton was hero?
He was just playing football. Like,
I know.
He was not. Tyler Eifert is mm-hmm. on this list. And Jordan Reed is part. Yeah. You know, love the guy. Great player. Happy to deactivate him because he's part of my favorite story of all time related to fantasy football. I don't know if I've told this one before.
No, I'd love to hear.
Should I tell this one in like 60 seconds?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, semifinals matchup. This had to be 5-6 years ago. I go into a great team, stacked team. This is like with a bunch of our friends at Roto World back then, you know, Roto Pat, Sigmund Bloom was in it, Adam Levitan, all them sort of guys. And I'm in the semifinals, really good team, 14-teamer, up by 1 point, going into Monday Night Football. I'm facing Jordan Reed. And he was often, especially that season, really questionable all mm-hmm. the time. So he comes in, they start the game, he doesn't catch any passes, he's limping around, he's having a hard time. And then at one point, he gets up with the injury, limps off to the field, goes to the locker room. So it's over. I won this thing, right? He's going to come out in street clothes. I win. Nope. He came back out in the field, walked into the huddle, lined up in the slot, did a quick slant, caught a pass, fell down. I lost. He got the point and a half, got up, punched somebody, and got ejected from the game.
Oh, my
Not
gosh.
Not even kidding. That's
oh
what
my
I
got.
Yes. And in like 5 minutes, everything changed
everything
right there. My stack team ended just like that.
That
literally
no,
got
amazing.
Ejected.
There are no deductions for the punch.
It was that's amazing. So thank you for that, Jordan.
Also, our colleague
so
at ESPN. The other Jordan Reese.
The other Jordan
Reese. Right. Just
course,
great ESPN draft coverage. If
I love his mock drafts. Jordan's mock drafts are deep,
seven
too.
Rounder.
Yeah.
Seven rounder.
If you like going in, Jordan knows what he's doing.
He is all in on the draft, as he should be. So those are the tight ends, and then we'll just pay homage to one kicker. Because although we always tell you, like, wait until the last couple rounds for a kicker in your draft, you actually got an advantage if you reached a tiny bit on Steven Gostkowski.
Yeah, for, 2013 to 2015, the number one kicker three straight years. So if you had went a round or two early, maybe it paid off. It is Steven Gostkowski, yeah. So I just had some great years there with the New England Patriots. They, for a while there, they just knew how to find those kickers. Crushed it. Vinatieri to Gostkowski.
Yeah.
They were like, we're done with Vinatieri,
right?
There,
right? Yeah. He could absolutely bomb kicks from 50-plus yards.
What's more impressive, going from Vinatieri to Gostkowski or going from like Montana to Young or Favre to Rodgers? Like, I don't know which of those is more impressive. But
I think I'll probably go with the quarterbacks over the kickers, but it's a healthy conversation for a different show, maybe.
Agree to disagree.
All right. Let's go to some social questions, and these come via the tweet machine. The bird, or is it the Doge app these days?
I don't know what it's called anymore.
I'm sticking with the bird app.
Yeah, you want to do it?
But I think there was a Doge logo for a minute, right?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Doge coin, yes. All right, we're back to the bird app. So let's discuss the question from Philip. Daniel, I will start with you. Do you think the Bills ride with James Cook, or do they draft a running back? Keep in mind, they also have signed Damian Harris this offseason.
Yes, they have. I think that they, can both of these things be right? Like, I think James Cook will probably be their lead guy, maybe the guy that they look to with more touches than anyone else. But I also think that they are going to draft somebody. I think
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
It's an annual tradition these days, it seems like, for them.
I feel like they always draft running backs. Like, and it doesn't have to be an early round guy, but I would just assume that they would, again, add to that position.
I don't think they will. I don't think they touch that position. I think you spend a second rounder in James Cook. I think he's a guy who you want to push for 13 to 15 touches.
You did that last year with Zach Moss, and you ended up using a second rounder the year after.
But you have Damian Harris there, too, they bring in, who, look, maybe he's not a roster lock, but I think he's a good back. He's a good runner. I think he'll have a role. They wanted a bigger back that, you know, he made perfect sense for them to sign because that's what they were looking for. They bring him in, and they already spent assets to bring in Nyheim Hines and redo his deal. And I think he barely played on offense last year. I think they expand his role in passing situations. So I think they have what they want now. I'll be surprised if they do anything more than maybe a late flyer and a special team running back.
So then James Cook would still be the number one, though. If you're taking anyone from this team, it's James Cook and then Damian Harris.
With obvious limitations.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm going to love him from a fantasy perspective because I think they're going to use three guys this year.
They're going to use three guys, and if he had to make a bet, or if he had to make a hierarchy, if they have the ball from the 5-yard line going in,
Damian Harris.
He's number three on the depth chart there, right? It's Josh Allen / Damian Harris in the 1-2 order. You decide what that order is, but it's going to be 1-2 before we get to James Cook as the consistent hammerhead at the goal line.
One of the worst-kept secrets of the offseason was the Bills want a big back, right? They've been trying to find that for years. They let Devin Singletary go. They bring in Damian Harris. I think they're set there.
Let's move forward to Jacob's question. Mike, I'll go to you here because you're old. Which older player should we expect to see drop-offs in production from?
This is, you know, it's funny. He's not old, but it almost feels old to me because he had 400 touches last year, which is Josh Jacobs, right? Like, he's not an old back at all, but he's the guy I'm like most worried about because you just seem like you age so much when you touch the ball that often, and history shows. a drop off there. So also, like, other running backs that have been elite the past 5 years are all 27, 28, 29. Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, Aaron Jones, Dalvin Cook. Like, all those guys are nearing that cliff, and I'm a little nervous about them. And then the other one I just want to make fun of or give Field a hard time is Travis Kelce, 33 years old. Is this the year? He starts to slip on a little
Mike,
bit.
I am not going to rank him like he is expected to slip much this year. I just think from a process standpoint. I was just going through some wide receiver work this morning, and as I was looking at some of the players that are in like that top 20 to 25 consideration, there are a couple of wideouts that, based off of how they performed last season when they played, plus what the current depth chart of the team that they are on for right now looks like.
I think I know where you're going with this.
DeAndre Hopkins and Keenan Allen. Two wide receivers, it's like, there are a lot of boxes that they currently check that you love. I mean, Keenan Allen especially, because you know there's quarterback stability and you know he's going to be there in Los Angeles. DeAndre Hopkins, who was top 9 in fantasy points per game amongst wide receivers last year because he had 96 targets in 9 games. But who's the quarterback? Mm-hmm. What's the offense look like? It's an entirely new offense. And will he be there? We don't know. So those are a couple of wide receivers where age is the most disconcerting factor right now. Understanding that other things could flip between now and the start of the season.
Yeah, one thing I'll say about Keenan Allen is, and keep in mind, when he was a full go last year, he was the number 3 scoring fantasy receiver. He was really good, heavily targeted. The guys that seem to hang on the longest in terms of fantasy relevance are the slot guys, right? The short range guys, and that is Keenan Allen more so than a DeAndre Hopkins or another guy I'll add on here who's not, I think he turns 30 this year, or is 29, 29? Mike Evans.
That was interesting.
Right, the quarterback situation there, Tampa Bay's rebuilding. He's a guy, just the role he plays makes me a little bit nervous. So I don't, he's low in my rankings. He feels uncomfortably low.
This next question comes from Charles. And Stefania, this is one that obviously has a very important health tie. How high should I draft Jameson Williams?
Yeah, it's a good question. Why are you shaking your head?
Not high. Yeah. I think the answer is not high. Like, I love Jameson Williams, but I saw, outside of the medical stuff, which I want to hear about you from, Stefania, we saw like 4 plays from him last year, and it's really hard to be able to just project anything other than excitement about that player.
I think, he's going to be a deep threat, but how much is he going to be a wide receiver too, which is my guess is probably where he'll land in that offense with a lot of mouths to feed, but he'll have a better year from a health standpoint. He comes in. I love the fact that he got playing time on the field because it answers a lot of the questions that are the hardest thing when you're coming back from this injury is, can I do this at the same level that I did before my injury? Not only did he accomplish that, he's actually performing at a higher level considering he's now gone from college to NFL. So it removes all of those questions. A full year to get ready conditioning-wise for the NFL. I think he's going to be the player he was before, but it's the opportunity cost in terms of fantasy. I think just within that offense, I would look at him as a wide receiver too with upside.
Yeah, first of all, Daniel, tip as usual, hating on the Lions.
Right. As usual,
biased against
him. He's trying actually to show that he's being objective. It's really hard for him.
Overcompensating
like,
a little bit.
Lion, lion.
I have him 47th at wide receiver, so you're talking.
That's
maybe
not high.
But his ADP right now, early ADP 12 teamers, is around the 7th round. That is a little early for me, so I don't know if I'm going to have a lot of Jameson. Right now they just brought back Marvin Jones. We'll probably have a little bit of a role. They're not going to target the tight end a lot, but there's.
I think he's one of those that could rise as the season goes too. You know?
So a couple thoughts. Now, Dan, what is your thought here as the unbiased Lions fan?
So this is not, it's not the same. These are not the same situations, but I just feel like we all got so excited about what we saw those final 4 games out of Gabe Davis that there was this excitement of the unknown and what he will be able to do in this office. And I think we saw some of that with the few plays Stefania mentioned from Jameson Williams. But I don't know how you look at him and say from a full season standpoint, I can't draft him as someone other than a wide receiver 4 for my 5 for my team.
Don't you guys love this, though? This is Daniel, who's got all this scar tissue built up from being a Lions fan.
He's trying to be calculated and reserved.
Yeah, no, I think that's so. Well, Mike has him as a wide receiver 5. 40, that seems reasonable to me.
For my team.
So, a couple thoughts.
Yeah.
First of all, I will push back on the Gabe Davis comparison for one very specific reason. Jameson Williams, special talent. Like, we saw some of those plays last year coming off the ACL where he's running by NFL defensive backs. Like when you see a 5-star recruit's highlights on YouTube, and they're like 65 yards down the field from the closest defender. Jameson Williams made a bunch of guys who are supposed to be the best athletes in the world look silly. Mm-hmm. Crazy upside there from just a pure skill set standpoint. And I also think that, but I think some of the points are fair there. It's like not going too whole hog. And that's where I think, Mike, bringing up the specific rank you have as wide receiver 47 is important. It's also not. It's important because it's a good data point. If I have one thing that I can make happen for ESPN Fantasy this year, especially during the preseason, is that we stop getting so married to guys. I'm not saying Mike is doing this, but like, think of players in buckets.
Mm-hmm.
Jameson Williams at wide receiver 47. Mike, I don't know you have at wide receiver 42, but I'm guessing I could probably make a pretty compelling case for Jameson Williams
of
that guy,
yeah.
And you could flip it. So I look at Jameson Williams as somebody who should have an expanded role, who has an extremely special skill set, mm-hmm. plays a lot of games in a dome where quarterback's not going to have to worry about the elements, good enough quarterback throwing down the field, that if he was like a DeSean Jackson type season, wouldn't stun me.
Mm-hmm.
He could also have 38 catches this year for 579 yards. And 5 touchdowns, and that wouldn't stun me either.
Yeah, he could be a league winner for sure. In the middle rounds, I'm fine throwing a dart at him. He's going a little earlier than where I have him ranked right now, but I'm with you. Look, they drafted him in the early stages of the first round, early to mid portion of the first round.
With a big trade-up.
Yeah, big trade-up.
To be number one. You don't do that for a number two, right? You want a superstar guy that is a top 12 or 15 fantasy wide receiver. That's why you make that investment. So, I mean, they're not thinking about fantasy, but they expect stats that would make you a top-end fantasy wide receiver.
First round pick.
It's just so easy to get caught up in the excitement of what a player can be. That it's, I guess maybe that is the scar tissue of the Lions side of it.
A couple of questions that are sort of Jets related, or one is definitely Jets related, the other one a little bit more indirectly. That's where I'll start. Lucas asks, does the value of Aaron Jones increase or decrease with Jordan Love at the helm, Daniel? As of right now, obviously the Jets and the Packers, it's a matter of time when this deal gets done. But Jordan Love's going to be the guy to help Aaron Jones?
I got to look and see what Aaron Jones has even done with Jordan Love under center when he's been given that opportunity.
You know,
there's nothing.
You can't bother the samples. Right? There's no Jordan Love sample size that you can point to and this teaches me something.
So then this team is going to be worse without Aaron Rodgers under center. I think they're going to score less, and because of that, there's the two scenarios. Either Aaron Jones is going to be involved in the passing game as a part of that come from behind thing, which is what you're getting, but you're probably going to be scoring less points overall. So like, I feel like there's a little bit of a wash between those two things.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He's a mid-tier RB2 for me.
I think that's fair. I'm at RB14. He's 28 years old now. You have A.J. Dillon there who's going to probably split carries, essentially. So I think it's a slight down.
He's going to push for 50 to 60 catches because that's what he does. Mm-hmm. He's going to have touchdown outburst games because, again, regardless of who's the quarterback, that's what he does.
Yep.
He's going to lose some goal line carries. The offense might not be as effective. Big questions, though, at wide receiver for the Packers. So maybe that number 50 to 60 amongst catches is more like 55 to 65, and that should be good enough for him to hover in that RB2 range. Mike, should Garrett Wilson be receiving early round draft consideration, full PPR? Because my most recent ranking updates can make the case for him as wide receiver 11 with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback, which is not, to me, That's not that like outlandish of a take at all.
It's not at all. He was 21 last year. Now you got Aaron Rodgers in your second year. I have him at 13. So I'm very close to you. That's fine. You look, again, another guy like Jameson Williams was picked in the first round to be an alpha number one receiver. and he was good enough on tape. Actually, statistically, his catch rate wasn't great because they had quarterback problems, right? So you think about what was left on the table. But you think about a guy that flashed that way, you would imagine Aaron Rodgers will like him, right? And that's very important. He looked good enough for me that, yes, I think he's in for a step forward.
I also think the biggest potential limiting factor is this is out of his control, is right now it's Garrett Wilson, Alan Lazard, Corey Davis, you know, a couple other ancillary parts.
Mm-hmm.
If that quickly becomes Garrett Wilson and Odell Beckham Jr. Mm-hmm. and Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard, it could have a different sort of – the target share just might be impacted if Aaron Rodgers brings the band back together, which there are some suggestions he will be doing that.
Yeah, I needed a huge target share last year, so that was important. But maybe it's a lower target share but more efficiency and touchdowns.
Yeah.
I feel
good about that one. Given where he was last year with only 4 touchdowns, I think might have 3 receiving touchdowns total. You expect that number to at least double. I think he will be one of the trendiest breakout players in fantasy football this year.
Yes, I can't believe that he was wide receiver 21 with Zach Wilson, Joe Flacco, and Mike White as
his
quarterback.
Mike White kind of slung it there for a little bit.
Slung it from a fantasy perspective for us. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to their other quarterbacks, he was great.
Got himself a nice little contract.
Now he's
in Miami.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the pressure. You know, it's funny about doing the job that we do. It's the greatest job in the world. And we spend a lot of time down deep in the weeds, right? We're trying to figure out who's wide receiver 47 versus wide receiver 46 or 42 or anything in between. And yet I always tell people the most common question that I am asked, if you just happen to cross by one of us in the streets during the offseason in New York Times, or I mean near Madison, whatever, MSG or whatever, Times Square is what I was actually looking to say.
Wherever Field hangs out usually.
When I say that, don't delete it. Times Square is who should go number one overall. Mm-hmm. So, Stefania, I'm going to put the pressure on you. If you were doing a draft right now, who is the first player off of your board?
Let's see if she's biased here. Who could it be?
You think I'm going Christian McCaffrey?
Brock Purdy.
Ross Dwelly.
Ross Dwelly.
And I might, because a healthy Christian McCaffrey could have. We saw how much they were utilizing him, and it's interesting. I was listening on the Bill Barnwell show. They had Seth Walder on. They were talking about who would potentially they were talking about bets and prop bets going forward, and so they were talking about bets for MVP. And one of their, like, long shots, if you wanted a big payoff. And one of the ones that came up was Elijah Mitchell. And as funny as that would seem, the point was San Francisco could have a multiple quarterback situation. So if they have, you know, inconsistency at quarterback and somebody else from is expected to step up and is, like, kind of key for them all year long. And their example with Elijah Mitchell was if Christian McCaffrey gets hurt. But I say he's not going to get hurt. Okay. And we saw how much damage he did. So I might lean Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, my only qualm there is if you look at games when Elijah Mitchell played, Mitchell had more carries and goal line work. And they feature McCaffrey in the passing game, but that – makes me nervous that they might try to limit his workload a little bit, because that's what we said. They love Mitchell.
Now, well, they were managing a little bit of an under-the-radar injury situation with him, too. And so there is that gamble. That was actually a real thing. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't really talked about.
Can I ask?
But in terms of doing damage fantasy point-wise in both the run game and the pass, like, that's what I'm really looking for, is somebody who can really do both and is going to find the end zone.
Not necessarily a vote, but one nomination for Christian McCaffrey. Do you have a different player that comes to mind?
I don't know if I would nominate this player, but on that same note, I feel like the two running backs that you would consider would be CMC, and we just highlighted some of those reasons why you would wonder if that's the right decision, and Austin Eckler. And I don't know any updates on the Austin Eckler situation.
It's the biggest story that generated absolutely no traction, because I think that he has probably generated no traction on a trade this offseason. He, of course, requested one. The Chargers authorized him to go seek and get one.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
These are not the same thing, but it has tentacles that are similar to Lamar Jackson, because teams are saying, hey, we'll take Austin Eckler in his current contract, $6 million. We'll trade you a mid-round pick for that. But if you want us to trade you a savory pick plus pay the premium, which at running back could be around $15, $60 million per season, they're unwilling to do that. I think if we get past the draft and nothing has changed, I'd be surprised. Maybe the compromise is the Chargers are able to structure his contract in a way that allows him to earn more if he performs comparable to how he has performed over the past two seasons, because when you boil it down to it, the biggest bargain in football the past 2 years has been Austin Eckler.
I still highly recommend, we talked about this before, go listen to the conversation he had with Chris Long on his podcast.
Yeah,
it is fantastic for all these things that we always talk about. Why don't running backs get paid? And actually, Chris Long echoed what I've been saying for years, which is that there should be a different salary structure for running backs. They shouldn't have to wait 5 years to get paid, because their position is inherently devalued by the risk. But Austin Eckler talks in that episode about, like, one of his selling points to teams, even his own team, why he thinks he should get paid. He stays on the field, and he does all these things in the offseason to try and ensure, to the best he can, understanding that it's 100% rate of injury in the NFL, that he can stay healthy. And that it's very interesting, because they understand that for running backs, that is the biggest, biggest knock.
You know, the funny part is, this is totally unfair to Austin, but NFL teams have a very, like, I guarantee you their first counterpoint when he says that, which is a totally fair thing that Austin Eckler brought up is they're going to say, great, Jonathan Taylor was that way too until he wasn't,
right? Oh, yeah.
That, well, which is, cannot, that's the hard part.
Well, then they'll say that everybody who got paid, that's what happened is they got hurt the next year. Mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey included. It's
tough.
It's what rude. Happens, but it's why those guys deserve to get paid sooner.
It just feels like right now, the conversation about 101, those two running backs are the top two in my mind, and there are just more question marks around them right now than there probably will be once we get to July.
I would lean towards
July.
Eckler out of those two if I'm making a Me pick too. At number one. It's a running back. This isn't a concern. The only factor that I have in mind for Austin Eckler this year, assuming he plays for the Chargers, that has piqued my interest a little bit. He goes from one of the least aggressive offensive coordinators in the NFL, yep. Joe Lombardi. Their air yards per attempt last year was 31st. Mm-hmm. I don't know who was last beyond that, but it was probably a team that just had like non-functioning pieces there. To Kellen Moore, who likes to push the ball down the field. And obviously, Eckler is so special that part of the reason why an offensive coordinator is throwing the ball less down the field is because you have Austin Eckler at your disposal. But if that chops off, you know, 15 catches over the course of the season, it has a little bit of an impact on him, not to the point that it changes my mind of him over Christian McCaffrey or any other running back, but it fortifies the case of somebody like Justin Jefferson or Cooper Kupp or Devontae Adams or Tyreek Hill or any of those top receivers who all I think have a credible case to being the first player off the board, Mike.
Yeah. Well, if you open up the draft room right now and do a draft, the first player you're going to see is Justin Jefferson. Yeah. He's number one on my rankings. That's where I go. I feel less good. Is that a thing? Less good about running back than I have in a long time. There's so many question marks, including Eckler. Will he be on that team? And of course, McCaffrey that I just laid out. Same thing with, you know, Jonathan Taylor and other guys in that range. So right now, for me, it's Justin Jefferson. He's been fantastic for three straight years. He's elite, high floor. Minnesota is top six in touchdowns during the Kirk Cousins era. I mean, say what you want about Kirk Cousins. The guy finds the end zone with the skill guy. So I feel really good about Jefferson. Safe play and a high ceiling play. He's my first pick.
Yeah, by the way, a defense that maybe on paper is marginally better. I don't think it's a lot better right now. Mm. And that was part of the reason why they kept playing all those games like they were last year, is that they couldn't stop anybody. So they were having to play not necessarily catch up because they won all these one-score games, but they were protecting a lead on occasion, on more than an occasion last year. So I think there's like, I really do believe there is a legitimate case for like seven or eight players as the number one player in fantasy football this year, because that top tier of wide receivers, it's really tough. Like, if you just go back and look at the numbers from the beginning of 2021, and this is somewhat referenced in our Tuesday show, on a points per game basis, the most valuable player in fantasy football is Cooper Kupp. It's very early, but I haven't heard too many people that are banging the drum right now to say Cooper Kupp should be the number one player in fantasy. I'm not saying it wasn't a real injury.
No, the Rams don't inspire a lot of confidence right now. That whole offense and everything.
But
their offense was terrible, and he was the most productive player.
The guy, I know, you're right.
He was still great last year when that offense stunk.
He was.
I believe, and I could be way off here, I believe enough in Sean McVay, and I believe enough in a healthy Matthew Stafford, and I believe the Rams took the biggest punch in the face that you could take as a football team last year. The worst season by record in NFL history for a defending Super Bowl champion. It's going to be different. It's not going to be at the level it was in 2021. I don't think it has to be for Cooper Kupp to reign supreme again as potentially the number one player in fantasy.
By the way, speaking of teams having to throw the ball, have you seen the Rams defense on paper right now?
It is a shell of itself.
It's about as bad as I've seen in the last decade of analyzing rosters. And it has Aaron Donald on the team. That shows you how rough it is behind him.
It's something like six of their top 20 players are either under contract or still a free agent. Like, everybody else has already been pushed out the door by release, trade, or departed in free agency. It is absurd.
Yeah. I think it was two guys who played at least half the snaps last year there, and one is Aaron Donald.
Yeah. So just to put a pin in it, like right now, my pick is also Justin Jefferson as number 1.01 off the board. But other names, certainly consider Austin Eckler, certainly consider Justin Jefferson, certainly would consider Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill. I mean, Cooper Kupp, Jamar Chase. Like, there are some awesome, awesome names.
Travis Kelce.
I mean, that's more of a strategy roster construction pick than it would be like.
But it's justifiable.
It's justifiable. You're going to get a potential 10-point edge every single week over your opponent, who is sitting there going through the carousel of a tight end who could have five catches, or he might have one because there are so few good tight ends.
So speaking of Travis Kelce, Field, we can close out on this if you don't mind. Travis Kelce, I asked Kyle this, how many games he's played. Travis Kelce has played 144 games, right?
Okay.
He has 2,270 fantasy points. Tony Gonzalez played 270 games. That's 130 more games right now. And he has 3,500 fantasy points. So Travis Kelce still needs 1,300 fantasy points to beat number one overall tight end. That is a huge amount of fantasy points with how much Travis Kelce's already played, I feel like.
Tony Gonzalez was really good.
I was
say, Tony kept going, too,
He played a long time.
Tony never reached the point where you were like, oh, my God. Like, that isn't even Tony Gonzalez. He just took, like, small steps back towards the end of his career. He was a very good player with Atlanta, but not as dominant as he was during his time in Kansas City.
He's another one where you just wanted it for him. He hung on and it just didn't.
And Kelce, like any of these players at this juncture of their career, has to make a decision at some point. Do I want to go out at the peak of my powers, or do I want to go out when the rest of the league tells me that I am no longer a valuable football player? That is a conversation that I hope we are not having for like
long time.
Five years, at least, because I remain very bullish on Travis Kelce. That is going to do it for today's Fantasy Focus. We are back on Tuesday. Make sure to, if you haven't already, check out the trivia episode from this past week. He's Mike Clay. He's Daniel Dopp. She's Stefania Bell. I am Field Yates. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Do not forget, 3 weeks until the NFL draft.
Yes, let's go.
He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks.